Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy New Year. This is Zachary Cohen, VSiN.com, senior editor with another episode of Hardwood Handicappers. Today, I'm joined by Jonathan Von Tobel, co-host of Money Moves and Pod to the Futures, one of the best hosts that we have with VSiN, and a guy that I love to talk about the NBA with. JVT, how are you doing today?
I don't know about best, but I certainly I'm a high volume shooter for sure, given what I do for the network. So whether it's due to efficiency or maybe I'm just kind of like a chucker off the bench, either way, I appreciate it. Happy New Year, doing well, and looking forward to today's card. It's actually got some sneaky depth to it, even though there's only a few games on it.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. Hopefully some people got into some better plans than I did last night, by the way, with New Year's. Like, I'm just so old and washed now that it's dinner. Like, put the baby to bed, and then we turn on CNN to watch Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, which is, like, absurd. But, yeah, it's I'm hoping that people did something fun, like stuff that I used to do back when I was, in my prime. But I don't know. What did you get into?
Wow, readily admitting you're a lib to your audience. That's crazy. I watched Star Trek Beyond, which is the third of the Chris Pine Star Trek films. I got to tell you really quick. I know we have, like, a time limit. Are you big on do you use Reddit a lot at all?
I use Reddit sometimes, but like not for movies.
Okay, so I like Reddit a lot. I use it, it's a communal thing. You hear people's opinions on stuff. I've learned a lot of things. So anyway, long story short is for some reason what I like to do is, especially when I watch movies like this, I was curious, like, oh, what's the reception or what was the reception of Star Trek fans? Because I don't care about Star Trek. The only bits of Star Trek I've seen was this, and then whenever my dad would have it on when I was a kid, and I was like, this is awful. So I Google it because I have been down this wormhole of watching the three J.J. Abrams, I think, right? It is whatever it is, Star Trek movies. And so I look up the second one, which I had just watched the other day. And like, there's just this Reddit post of like, oh, I hated the plot and Khan was this and that and blah, blah, blah. And then I watched the movie and the guy like completely misrepresents the entire movie. And I'm like, what? Like, you nerds, like, can we just relax? Let people enjoy things. And then it led me to an Onion post that was an old one. And it was Star Trek fans upset that new Star Trek series of films is enjoyable and easy to watch. So yeah, it's been quite the New Year's Eve for me because I was just down a Star Trek wormhole while watching the movies.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those Star Trek movies. I also like the new Star Wars movies. I think that also old Star Wars fans hated. So I don't know. I'm not the guy to ask about like the keep staying true to the nerds' wishes. So I'm with you. I thought they were fun movies. I don't know.
I could just hear that guy's voice. I don't know. Their brand of Klingon, the dialect and the accent wasn't really that good. Like, shut up, nerd.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to Donovan Klingon now. They're not playing.
That's a good
tonight,
one.
They're not playing tonight. But I let's talk quickly about last night. Because I don't have much. I didn't watch too much NBA last night. But I will say, if you had Spurs on the spread and not the money line, I ended up taking minus 125. I hope everybody took minus 125 with me. But, man, if you took 2.5, 3, or 3.5, that's one of the worst beats I've ever seen. Because the Spurs were up, I believe, 5 points with like 6 seconds left. They have the ball in the corner, ready to run the clock out. And Jalen Brunson not only steals the ball, but makes like a behind-the-backboard three that was like fading out of bounds, falling into the bench that he just never needed to take at all. And he drains it, and it's just so bad that I was thinking, like, if I were running a sports book, I'd be doing one of those dumb refunds. But, like, it was just so, so bad. I can't believe he tried to steal that ball. And it's one of those things that, like, there were no intentions behind it, but, like, it seemed bad, and it seemed like he was playing for the spread.
Well, first off, Stormy would fight you. One of the things that I like to do to get under her skin is every time one of those like injury refunds comes up, I just turn my laptop and show her because she absolutely hates those things for some reason. You guys can confab over it next time you come on. But I would say one of the things that I think makes it a little bit worse, because you did a good job of painting the picture, the Knicks had the ball and they put up a shot and they missed. And so the Spurs rebounded. And so if you're sitting on the Spurs, you're like, oh, cool, we're good. Like, this shot, they're going to run this out. And then Brunson runs over and everything you described takes place. That was ridiculous watching that transpire yesterday. So like you said, I mean, if you laid it, because I actually thought the Knicks were the side there. So I was like, ooh, I look smart. 2.5. There you go. Stay inside the number. That was absolutely incredible. And you see it all the time. And it's funny. I saw it described as, one of the worst beats ever, because I didn't watch the final possession. So I'm like, oh, yeah. What is this? Like, is it just like a three at the end? Like, this happens all the time. And then you watch it happen. You're like, holy bleep. What was he trying to do? And then he was trying to get the ball back. They're like, inbound it. Like, dude, there's no time left. What was the point?
Yeah, I was at dinner and I just like looked at my phone and saw they won by two. I had no idea what happened. Then like 2 hours later, I get home. I saw Paulie tweeted like, holy shit. And I'm like, I go watch it. It was so bad. But we should also mention that I think Wemby got a little banged up in the game. He did say that he thinks he's going to be back next game, but he hyperextended his knee. So that seems to be going around now. But I do think that he'll be back pretty soon. So hopefully nothing too long. But if he is injured, obviously that's another kind of obstacle in his way with Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, I just don't think he's getting there. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit later, actually, about that award market. So we can do that. But anything else you watched last night?
No, that was it. Watched a little bit of that Knicks game, obviously wrapped up in Miami and Ohio State, and watching the Hurricanes absolutely like out physical Ohio State, yeah, which was kind of surprising. During the day, I watched a little bit more. I mean, obviously, you and I, we were texting about this. I had you on the show yesterday. Really fun to have day basketball and watching the Charlotte Hornets almost blow that against the Golden State Warriors, 132-125, the final score. You know, even coming away from that, I know we were kind of all upset in our Hardwood Handicappers group today. I said things that I may regret. But the Hornets still, with those guys out there, man, they're going to be pretty effective. And I think that this is a team that if they – it's been a big topic of conversation with guys like Zach Lowe and some others on some of these NBA podcasts of what are the Hornets going to do? Are they going to just try to keep going and see how far they can come along? And if they do that, I still feel like we can get there with this win total that I think all of us share for the most part. Kelly might be sweating out 30 wins, so we'll see if that ultimately transpires. But the numbers with LaMelo and Brandon Miller together with Con Knipple are great. They got very lucky with Knipple not missing really any time, so that's a very good thing for them with that ankle injury he suffered. I think it was against Orlando, if I remember correctly. And just this team as a whole, like there's little things. I know he only played 17 minutes yesterday again, but Tejan Salon's kind of coming around pretty nicely. Yeah. This is a group that I do think is going to be pretty feisty down the stretch. And with, I don't know if they'll do it, Zach, but there is not much, I would say, separating them between the where they're at now in the top 10 seed in the Eastern Conference. So we'll see what happens to Atlanta. You know, you have to do the game of the teams that are in there right now, Miami, Cleveland, Chicago, Atlanta, who would be the team that falls out? Could be Atlanta, could be Chicago. You also have to overcome Milwaukee. But either way, I think this Hornets team is as good, even in a non-win but cover. I think they were pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. Like, I think that there's definitely a chance that they end up playing themselves up a little bit. But I will say, like, they are kind of the team that I think if they were to get, like, Cam Boozer and just slot him into that power forward spot I think that they have a huge opening, like, they really take another leap for me because I do like Kalkbrenner. I guess he adds some size. He could be a starting center in the league. And then if you just put Boozer next to that big three of LaMelo, Khan, and Brandon Miller, you're suddenly cooking a little bit. So I'm kind of hoping that they end up getting one of those top three picks, and I would actually prioritize Boozer if I were them. I think it's going to be a draft where it's probably going to be a lot based on what you need because there's a top three, and you know there's no clear-cut number one, I don't think. I think it's going to end up being about fit for a lot of these teams, and man, I think that that team could really use a power forward like him.
Yep. Can I point out one more result too, just really quick before we get to these games? I think it's a bad loss for Toronto. I mean, Denver's got nothing, man. The starting lineup was Spencer Jones, Jonas Valanciunas, Jamal Murray, Jalen Pickett, and Peyton Watson. And you let Peyton Watson score 24 on you, and you lost at home 106-103. I don't even need you to cover. But the fact that you could have win that game with the Nuggets down four starters is absolute insanity to me.
Yeah, I had the Raptors money line in a parlay, and that loss ended up causing me a perfect night that would have been like plus 7 units or something. And I did kind of catch the end of that game, and I saw Brandon Ingram hit a three that seemingly sent the game to overtime, and then they reviewed it, and it was on his fingertips of like 0.1. So they ended up calling it back, but it shouldn't have taken that. You're right. Like, if you're a Toronto team that, you know, we've talked about as kind of like a sleeper in the Eastern Conference and started the year off pretty well, like this is just a really bad slide, and that's a terrible loss. Like, I think this Nuggets team is going to be really bad for the next 2-3 weeks. So losing in Toronto is pretty shocking.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's talk about tonight's games. There's not too many of them, but I think it's actually a sneaky good card, as you said. So we'll start with the Rockets at the Nets. Houston's laying 11.5 points. The total is 218.5. Did you take anything in this game?
No, I mean, there's a lot of questionables, right? I think that's what's kind of kept me away from this. I don't want to say no to grabbing 11.5 if I know that this trio of Adams, Capella, and Şengün aren't going to play, or if a couple of them aren't going to play. That's going to be the big thing. I also, just pointing out today, I don't know if you've noticed, and this is the time of year for it as well. It's also New Year's Day. A lot of guys that are for our audio audience, I'll put my fingers up. Ill today, as I put in air quotes. There's a lot of sickness today on the injury card, and I wonder, you know, I keep going back to who is the NBA player who on some pod was like, you know, if you see somebody in Miami with an illness, that means they're hungover. Yeah. They're not playing that day. So maybe just throwing that out there. But either way, I felt like Brooklyn, you know, you mean you've talked about this. If you go back over the last, what is it now, month or so, the best defensive team in the NBA. This team's been great. They're long, they're rangy, they're difficult to throw the ball around against. And so if you're not going to have one of your offensive engines, specifically with Şengün, and you can kind of just clog up the paint, and then you're just expecting that Kevin Durant is going to help you in some of these half-court settings, I think that Brooklyn has enough to stay inside of that number and also make it a pretty ugly game to go under. I know this opened 222.5. I think it's a lot lower now, right? Is it 218.5 at this point right now? Betting this under, I thought, was pretty good. And if Şengün plays and you get a little bump of the total, I think playing that under as well is a way to go. But the three guys being questionable did kind of scare me off of acting immediately. By the way, I should notice Michael Porter Jr. is questionable to play as well for Brooklyn.
Yeah, and that kind of speaks to your point about players being hungry. I'm sure Michael Porter Jr. enjoyed himself in New York last night. I did take the under, actually, at 222.5 last night. I posted it to the Pro Picks page, down at 218.5 now, so a major, major move, maybe not one that I'd be comfortable going under on now, but it is a meeting between, like you said, a Nets team that is all of a sudden very, very good defensively. I mean, over the last 15 games, number two in the league in defensive rating. The Rockets are number six in adjusted defensive rating over the course of the entire season, and both of these teams play very, very slow. Brooklyn is 27th in pace over the course of the entire year, and Houston is number 28. So I do think this is going to be a game that's pretty ugly. And the under is actually 14-5-1 when Brooklyn plays at home, with totals between 220 and 229.5. No longer relevant now that it's at 218.5. But these low totals, they still tend to go under. So that's been a trend under Jordy Fernandez, who is somehow like the best coach in the league, despite having the weirdest roster of all time.
Dude, I wish this will never happen. But, you know, we were talking about this in the NFL. I wish these voters had some balls and would actually look at good coaching jobs and give it to guys. If there was a coaching job that deserved contention for best of the year, how is it not him right now?
Yeah, it's like it's 2 years in a row now. Like last year, it started off really hot and it was just kind of right away. And then they traded all of his players and they never really refound it again. But this year, it's started off ugly. It looked like it wasn't going to get better. And he's just found a way to get all of these guys to fit together. And not only that, it's like these weird players that have never been known for being good defensive players are all of a sudden playing like OKC level defense. So I'm with you. Like it should be that situation. Like I remember, you know, Spoelstra's never won coach of the year, but the year that the Heat won like 43 games and like had that really terrible Dion Waiters team that just was like not losing, like he should have won that year.
I mean, carrying Dion Waiters in any way, shape, or form. Well, that's a good shout out. I sent you guys a picture of, I can't even remember. Oh, Andre Roberson yesterday. I was just like, yeah, you know, I was just thinking about old players and this popped up. But I was just, to the point of Fernandez too, I think it was Zach Lowe who had a good line. It was like, hey, the Nets tried to Fernandez proof their roster with a bunch of bad players. And he was just like, I'm still a good coach.
Yeah, he's too good. Like, yeah, there's a few of those coaches around the league now, like that are just really good coaches in bad spots. Like Will Hardy, I think that like eventually we're going to be talking about him. Like he's, you know, as Bolstra, but it's just, it's a really weird situation. Like, I agree. Like, I think that there should be a way to win coach of the year, even if you're not a good team. Okay, well, let's move on now to Heat at Pistons. This game is at 7 p.m. Eastern. The Pistons are laying 4.5. The total's 237.5. I actually took a player prop in this game. I took Andrew Wiggins over 14.5 points at minus 118. It was a little odd to me to see it down that low. He's averaging 21.7. Over the last three games, he had 31 points in 37 minutes the last time he faced Detroit. And I just do think that the Pistons can struggle to guard his position a little bit. And Wiggins has been a player that has, you know, kind of stepped up, you know, in road games. He's at 15 plus in 8 of the 13 he's played this year. And there's still no Tyler Hero for the Heat. So there's definitely shots to go around.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I went for this one. I went under 238.5 for the game. And I know we're down to like 237.5. I think there's a couple of reasons here. First off, if you go back to November 24th, this Heat team has kind of been on a little bit of a slump. They're 7-9 straight up. They're 5-11 against the spread. So the market got out a little too far ahead of them. Prior to this three-game win and cover streak that they're on, they had been 1-8 straight up and against the spread in those previous nine. And I don't know if I'm taking a ton away from wins and covers against the Hawks, Pacers, and Nuggets, who in that game, that's when Nikola Jokic got hurt. Yeah. And if you were watching it, They were actually, they were up by about, I want to say 15 or so. Nuggets came storming back and then made it like a 1-point game or something like that. And then, of course, Jokic gets hurt. The rest is history. But if you go back over these last 16 games, the offensive rating, 114.5 in non-garbage time. It's pretty poor. But what has stuck out to me, Zach, is if you actually look at some of the other numbers, they're actually 8th best in turnover rate, and they're 11th in offensive rebounding rate. So they're not turning the ball over. They're actually getting second chance opportunities, and they're still one of the best or worst offenses over this stretch. I think the league might have figured out this offense that we were all really excited about here. So I think Detroit has been a very good home team. They're 13-2 straight up, 8-6 ATS, but really they have the second best home defensive rating in the league right now at 107.3. I think that this is one where they're going to try to not play at such a pace that the that the Heat want to. They're a good defensive team at home. I think this this offense being on film is going to help out a lot too. I thought 239.5 at the open was a little strong because I think this is a lot of Miami's a fast-paced team, not accounting for what the Pistons play, how the Pistons play. So I went under 238.5. Didn't get the best of the number, but we're starting to creep down a little bit further.
Yeah, I think I would lean under as well. And I kind of wonder, like, the way we just said that, you know, Brooklyn tried to Jordy-proof the roster, I wonder if the Heat have kind of Spoelstra-proofed it, where it's like he could put in this new system, he could change as much as he wants, but the players aren't good enough for them to be a top five offensive team. And you kind of saw that early in the year because, like, they were number one in pace by a wide margin, and everyone was talking about the system, but at the same time, they were, like, 16th in offensive rating. So now that they've cooled down a bit, it's just like, yeah, good job, Spoelstra. You've worked really hard to, you know, try to change your ways, but, like, this team just still isn't good enough. They need, you know, an infusion of talent, and that's why they keep getting mentioned in, like, the Giannis deal. And I think I agree with you. Like, I think this is a game where it goes under, and I would lean Pistons also at the -4.5.
Yeah, I would too. I think it's worth noting to your audience, the Pistons haven't really slowed down in terms of winning since November 29th. They're 10-4 straight up, but they are 5-8-1 against the spread. They're only covering by about a point per game. That tells me the market's pretty much caught up with where this team should be rated, maybe a little on the high side. So it's always a little hard when you're watching a team in that stretch kind of deal with it, being kind of almost perfectly priced. But I do think that this team is going to be the side for me. And I think the market's – are we at 5? I think the market kind of headed in that direction a little bit too, right? At 4.5, yeah.
They are coming back also from like a 5-game road trip and like 7 road games in 8 nights, so maybe they'll be fired up to be home. And
that's the old school handicapping angle. You got to take care of your broads and pay the bills, and you're coming back home after a long road trip.
Yeah, Cade Cunningham's got to take care of his broads.
Yeah, that's right. These women, they don't know how to pay bills, so we got to take care of it. You know, those sort of things.
Now I'm reading Miami. No,
for those who maybe have not heard me do that joke before, that's an old school handicapping angle. Like, especially in baseball, when you'd go on these long road trips, old school handicappers would be like, "Ah, you got to go home and take care of the wife. The first day back's always difficult." Like, I heard it so many times.
All right, well, start the new year off as a better with the VSiN Pro subscription. This is the final week to save 50% off the regular monthly price with our holiday special. Sign up now and get VSiN Pro access through May 1st for just $79, including daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, and 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, covering everything from the college football playoffs and NFL playoffs to March Madness and the Masters. Plus, you'll receive our college football playoff betting guide, complete with expert brackets, Steve Mackinnon's power ratings, college football playoff and bowl game best bets, and previews for every single bowl game. Start the new year with an edge. Go to vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Let's move on now to 76ers at Mavericks. This is probably the best game of the night. It's definitely the game with the closest point spread, so it'll be one that I'm going to be watching. But the Sixers are laying 2.5 points. The total is 230.5. Do you have anything in this one?
So I don't have anything. I do have a very strong lean that I wanted to talk to you about, and that was Dallas. So we know that Anthony Davis is going to play tonight. Jason Kidd told the media yesterday it's going to be about 30 to 34 minutes. Joel Embiid's probable, so we're going to get the trio out there for the Philadelphia 76ers. I don't know about you, man, but obviously the numbers would dictate that this Philadelphia trio really has not been what they wanted it to at this point. You go back to last year, it hasn't really been great. This year, when you look at it, all three of them on the floor, all three of them, of course, being VJ Edgecombe, no, I'm just kidding, Tyrese Maxey, Joel Embiid, and Paul George. I mean, they're fine, but their offense stinks. It's an offensive rating of 113.2. Their defense is good. They're getting outscored by like a half point every 100 possessions. So, you know, they're like a middling trio of guys that haven't been playing well. Paul George has been okay, but he's kind of fallen off. I was watching the Memphis the other day. I think they noted he was like on an abysmal stretch of like hitting 2-point jumpers. He has not really shot the ball particularly well either. And so I say all this to say, I think the market is kind of, and we saw this a little bit last year, when you have all three of them together, I think the market thinks they're better than what they really are. And the reality is like they're still really kind of working things out. And I actually don't think all three of them are kind of a good fit. Like you see when Joel Embiid leaves the floor, all of a sudden you've got like three springy guards on the floor and Tyrese Maxey's like, oh, we can finally run and we can finally play like 2026 basketball and I can kill dudes with this electric step back or do stuff with VJ Edgecombe. And then when Joel Embiid gets out there, it's like this slog of like screen, re-screen, and like little handoff. And then I'm going to like walk into a contested mid-range jumper. And I just, man, I don't know. I think they're a little overvalued when all three of them are together. And I think having perimeter-oriented bigs that are a lot more athletic, like Anthony Davis, like Cooper Flagg, I just don't think it's a good matchup for them because Joel Embiid's going to have to take one of them. So Embiid's going to have to be stepping out to the perimeter and then maybe having to recover. I just don't know if that really works. And then if he is, who's getting the other big? I think that Dallas is kind of live here if AD is going to be out there truly for that time frame.
Yeah, once you made the Edgecombe joke, I was thinking, like, it actually is that way. It's like they're better when they are able to just kind of play through Maxey and Edgecombe, and they just have, like, the most explosive backcourt in the entire NBA. When Embiid plays, it definitely changes things. He looked really good against the Grizzlies, and, like, I've seen a few games now in the last couple of weeks that have kind of been somewhat encouraging, but it's just, like, the second he starts to play well, something happens, and there's some sort of setback. But, yeah, this is a team that kind of needs to move on and just get to being, like, this perimeter-based team, like you said, and just playing faster. And I actually think the Mavericks are pretty good when Flagg and AD are out there together. I'm actually at the point where, like, I kind of just think Dallas should keep AD, and we should just see what this team looks like next year because – I don't know. Like, I thought that they were a fringe contender this year if they were able to get Kyrie back. And, you know, if they were in the Celtics position where they were, you know, near 500 or above 500 and brought Kyrie back, I would have really liked to see that team in the Western Conference playoffs. And, you know, now we've just seen that Flags, everything that he's going to do, is it does translate and he is a star. So I just kind of want to give Kyrie, Flagg, and Davis a chance next year. It doesn't look like they're going to do that, but yeah, I think that the Mavericks are a solid team. I'd say that they are my lean on the points with this points as well. And I do think this is going to be a game where their speed kind of does bother Philly because, you know, they can play fast now with Nembhard and those guards. So I think it's going to be an interesting game. I actually do. I did take Najee Marshall over 12.5 points at -104. He had 22 against Philly on December 20th. He's had 13 plus in 11 of the last 12 games. And
he's been good.
Yeah, he's it's like he somehow always scores like 12 or 13. So it's like he's not over that margin by a lot. And he doesn't take a ton of shots, but he's good going to the basket. He's good in transition. He can knock down a three or two a game. And I do think this is going to be a game where he's going to get it going. Over the last 12 games, he's averaging 16.1.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting going through some of the lineup stuff for the Mavericks. One of the things that had stuck out with Cooper Flagg and Anthony Davis, because like the overall numbers with them on the floor aren't like particularly great. You know, they get outscored by 3.8 points every 100 possessions. Offense is pretty poor. Defense is middling. But one of the lineups has been creeping up. One of their most used lineups is Nembhard, Cooper Flagg, Najee Marshall, PJ Washington, and Anthony Davis. Those five have a plus 29.2 net rating. Wow. They're averaging 120.2 points per 100 possessions. So, you know, and you wonder why. And it's just, you know, look, Nembhard's a pretty good guard, I think, in terms of what they've asked him to do. PJ Washington's a pretty good wing defender. And Najee Marshall just, yeah, look, he's not a great defender, but he's going to help with your offense. I think that those are kind of the lineups they're going to lean into a little bit more, and we've seen a little bit more of. And I think that's why I've seen this small improvement from him. Now, I'm also bitter because, I mean, I had him on Christmas. I had them plus 8.5. They lose, I think, by 9 or 10 or whatever it was. And Anthony Davis goes down. Like, this team this team owes me one.
Yeah, I had that as well. That was, like, my worst read of the entire day, I think, because it wasn't really like
no, it was good. Anthony Davis, they were going to be fine, and then AD got hurt.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I was saying, like, it was, like, a 10-plus point game all game. But, yeah, AD was out, so it definitely changes things a little bit. But, yeah, like, just think about the lineup you just said with Kyrie instead of Nembhard. Like, I do like Nembhard, but if Kyrie comes back and he's 90% of what he was after the ACL injury, you're talking about a team that's pretty good all of a sudden. So I just think that they should end up keeping Davis because I don't think that there's going to be a trade out there that like blows them away with assets. I kind of think, you know, I've talked about the Hawks one with Risa Shea a little bit. I almost think that like Risa Shea's in a weird situation where like you're going to have to pay him next year. And it could end up being a really bad contract if he doesn't take any type of step forward. So I'm not sure that I'm looking at him as like a blue chip asset in that trade.
No, I don't think you are. I mean, it's also it's telling that you just drafted him first overall, and you're already trying to move on from him. Yeah. So even if that's the case, you know, if you're Dallas, you're like, no, we need more than with just that. Just that.
All right. Well, let's go on to Celtics at Kings now. This game tips at 10 p.m. Eastern. The Celtics are 9.5 point favorites. The total's 227.5. I played a weird player prop in this one. I played Nick Clifford over 7.5 points at -112. He's had 8+ in 6 of the last 7 and double digits in 4 of the last 6. And he's just kind of starting to play a little bit more. It's almost like Sacramento starting to realize that they're not a good team and they need to lead a little bit into a youth movement. That's why you've seen kind of Reynaud play a little bit more. He's been really good. And I do think that Clipper is going to play close to 25 to 30 minutes in this game. He's played 29 minutes per game over the last 2. And if he does, I do think that there's a chance that he ends up having a pretty good game as a scorer. The Celtics are not very good defending above the break threes, and Clifford's very explosive in transition.
Yeah, I didn't have anything here. I mean, I guess my thing would be every once in a while, I guess you can get this Kings team to catch somebody slipping. You know, they did it to Houston right before Christmas. They beat them in overtime. Dallas post-Christmas, they got them without Anthony Davis. They had actually covered 5 straight before these last 2 games in Los Angeles where they just got smoked by the Lakers and the Clippers. And those were big spreads. I think they were catching like 12 and 10 respectively or whatever it was against those two teams. By the way, the disrespect, the fact that the market closed 2 points higher for the Lakers than as opposed to the Clippers. Let's get out of here. But I haven't really seen anything from Sacramento outside of the off, like, hey, they're going to catch you every once in a while, that I would think they're going to be able to stay in front of this number against Boston tonight.
Yeah, maybe there's something to, like, you're hungover after a holiday, and then you see Russell Westbrook on the other side of the court. You're just like, oh, my God, this guy's just crying. But yeah, I maybe I do lean Sacramento, but I don't know. This is a tough game to call, because also I think Boston, like, while I think that they're good, it's really hard to trust them to just blow teams out because of, I do think that there's still a team that, like, talent wise, I don't think that they're that much better than these types of teams at the bottom of the league. I just think that, you know, they've just run such a good offense. They played pretty well defensively this year, but yeah, 10 points is tough.
It's the Jeff Teague story, who, by the way, he's got the great, all these great stories,
best, but when podcast
he's,
ever.
When he's playing Russell Westbrook and he tells a story how Russell Westbrook did the rock the baby in front of him. And he said, man, I don't care. And Westbrook told him, that's the problem.
It's so good. All my whole, like, Instagram reels is like Teague stories. Like, they're just somehow, they never stop and they're all good. It's like,
very good.
I don't know. It's like, he had to have been the funniest dude ever when he was in the league, but they just got like a sponsorship deal for their podcast. Maybe like a DraftKings or something. I don't even
really
know. I think they got like a betting sponsor or something.
Oh, I have to check it out. I've only consumed it through all the clips of Jeff.
Same. I've never listened to the actual whole podcast. I don't know if I ever would, but I've seen the clips and like, they're all amazing. Okay, well, let's move to the final game of the day, which is a meeting between your Los Angeles Clippers and your Utah Jazz at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. This is a game where the Clippers are laying 12.5 points. Total is 232.5. I'll be honest, like, I'm sitting this one out for now because the injury report has both Lauri Markkanen and Keyonte George on it as questionable. But if those two are in at anything +7.5 or better, I'm going to take Utah in this game, even though I've been, you know, enjoying watching Los Angeles lately. They've looked a little bit better. I just think that this Jazz team, like, is just being a little bit disrespected in the market. I think that they are very close to being a play-in caliber team. And yep, if those two guys are out there, or even if one of them's out there, like, I think that this might be too many points.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Like you said, we want Mark and we want George. I also think, I mean, there's clearly an unsustainability to the way the Clippers have been playing these last 5 games. I think they're better than what they've shown. I think all of us with half a brain who's watched basketball know that they're better than they're shown. But some of the stuff, it's essentially an insanely efficient first shot offense. You know, what we talked about a little bit with Miami, they had over these 5 games for the Clippers, a 59.7 effective field goal percentage, and yet they're grabbing only 26% of their missed shots. So they're not generating. It's actually the opposite of the Heat, right? We just talked about the Heat being inefficient on offense despite not turning the ball over and getting offensive rebounds. The Clippers have been highly efficient despite not getting offensive rebounds and second chance opportunities. They're taking a lot of their shots from deep and they're hitting them. And I do think there's something to it. This is not, they're better without Zubac. But these new offenses, and I'll be very curious to see what this looks like when he gets back out there, they're just spread the floor out more. You know, they've got the shooting big out there now, and that's really spacing things out. It's allowing Kawhi Leonard to work in the sweet spot that he likes in that mid-range area. It's allowing him to do a lot of stuff. Harden is more comfortable getting to the basket as well. And of course, it's just Kawhi. Over these last 5 games, 37 points, 8.4 rebounds, 4 assists on 52% shooting and 46% from 3. He scored 30-plus in 4 of 5 games. His usage rate has gone up. First 17 games, 29.2% of possessions. These last 5, 36.1%. All of these are things that you look at and go, is it sustainable? And Utah, like we've talked about a ton, They're a very good team, man, especially Keontae George and Lauri Markkanen together, a 120.3 offensive rating. They're only getting outscored by 1.2 points every 100 possessions with those two out there. I'm with you. It's a good scheduling spot for the Clippers. We should note that. They're in the midst of a home stretch, and they've been at home since Friday and coming off a day of rest. But I think overall, Utah's done enough to prove to me here that in these spots catching big numbers, I kind of am starting to really believe in that duo if they're going to be out there.
Yeah, I mean, Kawhi's just gone scorched earth over the last couple of weeks and looks really, really good. Like really athletic and quick, just kind of like everything he wasn't to start the year. Like, obviously, that usually means that something bad is coming along the way.
Sure.
Hopefully, I'm wrong, but like, that's just always the way it feels with him. But yeah, I do think this is a game where I lean Jazz just because of the amount of points that they're getting. And I do think that they're just a good team now. Like, how quickly it's flipped from like, they need to trade Lauri Markkanen to like, they could build something around George and Markkanen if they just do it right. It's pretty amazing. I will say, like, I'm curious what you think. Like, I mentioned, I did some trade, like, ideas last week, and, you know, I put a bunch of Clippers ones. This is, like, when I was, like, under the impression that the Clippers should maybe be blowing it up. One of the trades I put in there was Zubats to the Celtics for Hugo Gonzalez, who's been really good, a first-round pick and, like, a protected first-round pick. I don't know if that would be an actual, you know, possibility. But I do kind of wonder if what we've seen from Lopez as a floor spacing five and still being solid enough defending the rim. And then I also think that Niederhauser has been pretty good off the bench.
Yeah.
He's a really exciting young player. I wonder if maybe the best way to thread the future and the now is to move Zoo for like two first round picks and whatever you can get.
I mean, you could. I also thought the way to do it potentially was, I don't know, man. We saw Cade Cunningham and Kawhi Leonard in a very deep conversation with each other a couple of days ago. And 3 weeks ago, there was no way you were going to sell Kawhi. Now, after these five games, and like you said, he's looked his best. And I'm sorry, there is, because I am a Clippers fan, and many people would, whatever, you could say whatever you want, you could joke about it. There is no player in the world that gets you more excited when he is playing at the peak of his powers. I don't think there's a player right now outside of maybe Nikola Jokic and maybe Luka when he's really on, that when he is at his absolute peak, taking over a game and potentially taking over a series, that he can really tilt the floor in your favor the way the Kawhi can when he does what he does on offense and defense. So if there's a couple of executives, the Pistons, that are looking at this and going, you know, he'd be a really good fit for us. I think you actually, to your point about something bad has to happen, I think you kind of think about, you know what, this is how we get our assets. Let's just go, let's break this off. He's probably not coming back after this deal's up. We've set it up so that him and Harden are gone, and the only guy that's under contract is Zubac. Let's just go that way. But I do wonder if that's the tact you take in not shipping off Zubac to kind of steer into the old man game and just hopefully get into the postseason and see what you do from there. Which, by the way, I wanted to bring up to you. So last time I brought this up to Stormy the other day, it was 3-1. It's +220 for them to make the playoffs. I think they're good enough to do that.
Yeah. They're definitely good enough to make the play. I mean, they could absolutely win the play-in. I guess, like, it becomes a problem if, like, Denver's in there healthy and all of a sudden you're looking at that. Like, that's going to be just terrible for all the other play-in teams. But what is the price for them to just be in the play-in? Like, I remember, I think I was watching when you said that. I think it was -110.
Yeah, it was -110.
Like, they're going to be in the play-in. Like, they're
I got this in front of me.
Good not to be.
Now it's up to -145.
That's still a good bet to me. Like, they're going to finish that. Like, even when it started off as bad as it possibly could, like, it's still like the same roster except for Norman Powell as last year that I thought was like the second best team in the Western Conference. So I just think it was only a matter of time before they kind of got it right and like just, you know, got back to mediocre. But I'm with you on that Pistons Kawhi deal, man. Like, we've talked about it a little. Like, that was one of the trades I had in that video I did. And like, that, it's just, you know, move him for Tobias Harris, Holland, Ivy, you know, a first round pick or two. Like, that's a really good trade for both teams.
Narratively, I mean, we'll see. I think your Suns are probably going to stick around, but could you imagine a world in which I shouldn't even say stick around. Maybe they just find themselves into the top six because Denver takes such a tumble. But can you imagine narratively and the ratings, a play-in that would involve the Denver Nuggets, the Golden State Warriors, the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Los Angeles Clippers?
That would be awesome. Yeah,
that'd be fun.
They wanted the NBA Cup to be.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that'd be incredible. I mean, I do think the Suns actually are going to finish top six just because I think that they're the team in that grouping that like would stand to benefit the most from like a potential Nuggets slide. I still think the Nuggets are going to be interesting. Like, I think we talked about it yesterday. Like, the final 30 games should be enough for them to get out of the play-in. And, you know, they did beat the Toronto Raptors last night, so maybe they won't be down there. But I do think there's a chance that they're like in that territory towards the end of the year.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Okay, and then before we completely end this, I just wanted to ask you a thoughts on a few awards. I was going to ask you about Coach of the Year. It seems like impossible to me. Like, I know that it's been really tough in the NFL this season as well. Like, there's just so many good candidates, but I think it's even harder in the NBA, honestly. If you look at like some of the names at the top of the list, you're either taking someone from like one of the better teams that hasn't done as good of a job, but like, I don't know, Bickerstaff's the favorite right now. Like, I don't think the Pistons are going to continue to be as good as they were to start the year. I think the Knicks might pass them, and that kind of made Mike Brown interesting to me. But at the same time, like, I'm more intrigued by these names like Mazzulla, who have done the jobs that no one expected them to do. So I don't know. You have any thoughts there? I mean, there's some really long prices on some of these coaches.
I mean, I think right now, if you're getting in on this, to me, I think Mazzulla's got to be it. You know, I know a lot of people, I think you've brought this up, and maybe you're going to ask me about this too. But a lot of people are looking at Jaylen Brown for MVP. Anything pro-Celtic, I think that you're going Joe Mazzulla instead, because I know that Brown has been great. But I think the way that you differentiate that, unless everybody just gets hurt and then there's only Jaylen Brown that's left, is the coaching job Mazzulla has done to this point to keep them in there. He's already a respected head coach. We talk a lot about exceeding expectations. It's not like this is a team that was expected to win the 50-plus games and then they're going to win those and that's going to be fine. No, this was expected to be a gap year. And I also think, I don't know if this entirely helps, the team that was just in the NBA Finals also thought it was going to be a gap year, and they have just fallen tremendously down the standings in the Indiana Pacers. Mazzulla being able to keep this ship, not even just afloat, but inside of the top three of the Eastern Conference. I know that Brown's been great, but this is a very good coaching job. If they finish inside of the top three, hell, even inside of the top two in the Eastern Conference, which is perfectly plausible, at 11-1, I would think that he is right up there with these guys to get this done.
Yeah, that's kind of why I brought it up. I think that Mazzulla is a really good look. I think that Ott is a really good candidate if the Suns do finish top six, but it's a really weird market. Yeah, by the way, I don't think Jaylen Brown's a good bet to win MVP. I was just kind of, it's like this, it's like if people are going to just be throwing darts hoping that SGA gets injured, I don't think he's that far off from a Brunson. So, like, that's kind of where I was at with the Jaylen Brown one, but it's got to be SGA as long as he just avoids that injury. But yeah, I think that Mazzulla is going to be a really, you know, strong, you know, contender in this race. And like, looking at the odds board, like, it just makes me angry. Like, why is Quinn Snyder still I'm so soured on Quinn Snyder. The team is so bad. Why is he 12th?
I don't know. I mean, I'm with you. I don't understand the way that that's gone and why this is priced the way that it is. I mean, to be honest with you, him, and it's funny how I was laughing about this the other day with on our show with Stormy, was how much the entire collective has soured on J.J. Redick, like, so quickly, and the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, all of a sudden, Luka Doncic is still, like, a little bit chubby and complaining about refs and sitting on the floor while everything goes the other direction. And, like, that thing is just, from a, at least, vibe standpoint, completely falling apart. Redick was one time – was he the, did he reach favorite status? I think he did, didn't he, at one point during their first, like, 12 games?
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm with you. Like, guys like that, they're up there for name value, and that's about it. You got to look at these guys and see what they're doing. And I think Mazzulla's got the respect enough to do it.
Yeah. So I guess, like, the long winded, like, I would throw in a play on like Ott and Mazzulla and just hope for the best here. Like, I did say Mike Brown a couple of weeks ago at 50-1. Like, he was 50-1 for like a few hours after the Knicks won the NBA Cup, which was insane.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's done as good of a job as anybody, because that team is like, he's found a way to like plug and play guys that I've never even heard of, like Diawara and these guys. Like, Kolick has turned into a really good player off the bench, and this is really just him doing everything that Thibodeau didn't last year and like doing it really well. So he's kind of done exactly what everybody was hoping he would do, and I do think that there's a chance that he ends up winning because of that.
We should also note too, I mean, Mitch Johnson does have a very strong candidacy, especially the way that they played in the non-Wemby games. Like, that's a pretty strong case to be made here. I thought he was going to slip from the standings, and I thought that meant that he was going to slip for the Coach of the Year, and that has not been the case.
Yeah. By the way, the Lakers thing, it's like, not to get too far off topic, Redick just should have taken a job that like allowed him to ease into coaching. I remember he had the Hornets job if he wanted it, and he didn't take it. That would have been a better job for him. It's just impossible to manage these egos. Like, I feel almost bad for him, because people are now questioning his ability to lead a locker room, but it's hard to do it with Luka and LeBron.
It is, but he also, like, dude, like, these are professionals. The whole I'm going to make fun, like, I'm going to be mad in press conferences and say that this is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And then on Saturday, the day that you said practice was going to be hell, one of your players, DeAndre Ayton, is asked, was it an uncomfortable practice? And he scoffed and said, you guys bought into that? that those are things that you can't do. You cannot sit there and have different standards for some of your better players and not for the same for the others. And you just get punked all the time. And I think that's what's been happening here too. Like, it's you, he was trying to be buddies with LeBron with the podcast, then they brought him in to be the coach, and then he realized, like, oh, LeBron doesn't actually respect me enough to actually let me be coach. And now you're in this weird situation where now you have Luka, who's gonna do the same thing. Like, yeah. It's I'm with you. You should have just, you could have been a coach with Charlotte. You could have been the dude that yells at these guys. You could have been the dude that chastises them in press conferences, because they would have no choice but to respect you. And instead, you went to L.A. with LeBron, who had, obviously, as a contemporary, was much better than you, and Luka Doncic, who's an absolute, I mean, I'll say it, he's kind of an a-hole to work with, it seems like. Yeah. Those are, that's a terrible situation on top of the branding and the stupid expectations.
Yeah, and it's funny because I really think he's a great X's and O's coach. And, like, I kind of do like his demeanor overall. It's just he can't get it done with the stars. Like, you just said it. You can't coach them the same way you coach the others. And, by the way, DeAndre Ayton has derailed a team before. He was, like, right. the main instigator with like, what blew up the sun. So it was not good to hear those comments coming from him.
I was amazed he said that.
Yeah. Okay, and then the last one I wanted to bring up, and I know that you've talked about it, which is why I wanted to do it. Rudy Gobert 25-1 to win Defensive Player of the Year.
Come
the
on,
numbers
buddy.
Are starting to look even better because he's sixth amongst qualified players in defensive EPM, and he's the only one of those six players that plays more than 30 minutes per game. And I just kind of think there's still a chance that those Thunder players kind of steal awards from each other, you know, steal votes from each other in this market specifically. And I just really think that we're getting to that territory where it's not going to be Wemby because he's not going to play 65 games. And I don't get why it's Chet as the favorite. Like, nothing about the stats say he should be. It was just kind of like a placeholder once Wemby got injured. And
I mean, the stats say it's Hartenstein that drives that.
Yes, yeah. Not, I mean, Holmgren. I have a play on Hartenstein at 150-1, but, like, I just don't think he's going to win. I don't think that, like, any Thunder player can win just because there's too many of them that are good. There's, like, six players on the Thunder in the top 10 in EPM defensively.
Yep. Yeah, so I've got Rudy. I went to go check on my app. So I've got Rudy Gobert at 50-1. That was placed back in, like, I think November when this first went down or whatever it is. We said it then. We'll say it again. The on-court, off-court splits with him out there versus not is absolute insanity. And I don't want to open up old wounds, but I will just say that the summer of, you know, the spring of Wemby and the Defensive Player of the Year, you all look like effing idiots when you were trying to make the case that Naz Reid was a better defender than Rudy Gobert. They're absolute morons, and I hope all of them are embarrassed. None of them will ever admit it. By the way, I still give Mitch crap for it on our pod, so, like, don't worry. I give it to him. But he is so very clearly making them better defensively with his ability to interrupt shots, protect the rim, do all this sort of stuff. The on-court, off-court splits are amazing. He's keeping them afloat there. The non-Gobert minutes are a nightmare on defense. This is something where we're live. He is respected. You're seeing it now. He's still playing. You thought he was washed because he was bald, but no.
Yeah.
No.
I was just going to say, like, I've come around on the bald head, too. Once you see him playing a little bit better, it looks a little bit better. So, yeah, I'm fine with that, too.
I mean, but at the end of the day, like, we're live here because I'm with you. I think the other candidates will start to dissipate a little bit here. Sorry. I'm saying this right now, too. If these mother effers start to make another stupid late season push for Draymond Green to win Defensive Player of the Year, I might go psycho. Because they're falling apart. That team's a nightmare as well. He can't stay on the bench because he's throwing hissy fits all over the place. I think we talk about some of these awards. We're in pretty good position with Keontae George. And I think if you got in on Gobert and we first brought this up at 50-1, we're starting to see that path carve out that he can win this thing for sure.
Yeah, and I'd say, like, I'd still get in on it at 25-1 if you can. I still think that that's worth it. I think anything 15-1 or better, I'd still play at this point because – yeah, like, when I was going through the stats, I was thinking that he really should be the favorite as of right now, and maybe that changes. Like, maybe Holmgren does find a way to get back to the top, but, like, the market is not pricing what's actually happening on the floor right now. Like, Holmgren is not minus 200. He's not, like, that implied probability is just nowhere near where it should be. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe, by the way, with Gobert looking washed, I think also he wore black sneakers one day, and that's another thing. You got to wear light sneakers. You look way faster with lighter sneakers, so that could have been it too. If he was, you know, bald head and black sneakers, he was going to look like he was moving with bricks in his shoes.
But the other day he did have a Bones Highland freestyle for the media in the locker room. So I don't know if that helped or hurt his reputation.
All right, well, let's recap our best bets. But first, attention to any listeners who are new to VSiN. Signing up for our free daily newsletter is a great way to catch up. Delivered straight to your inbox every morning, VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, and strategies for the day's betting menu. Sign up for free now at vsin.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That's vsin.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. All right, let's recap what we have for tonight. Why don't you let the people know what you have as official plays for this evening for right now.
Went under 238.5 with Miami and Detroit. And also, after talking out a little bit here, I will take 2.5 with the Dallas Mavericks tonight against the Philadelphia 76ers.
Awesome. And I have Rockets Nets under 222.5 at -110. Unfortunately, that probably is not available anymore. But
there's a 220 out there.
There's a 220. Yeah, I'd go under on 220. It was 218.5 that I kind of drew the line. Just a huge difference between like where I capped it and where it was. So I would think that under 220 would be a good play. I have Andrew Wiggins over 14.5 points at -118 versus the Pistons. Najee Marshall over 12.5 points at -104 versus the 76ers. And Nick Clifford over 7.5 points at -112 versus the Celtics. So four plays for me, two for JVT. And I'm sure if you watch Money Moves a little bit later, there might be a little bit more that JVT ends up adding to his plate. But that's all for today's episode. Happy New Year, as I said again. And join us for the Friday edition of Hardwood Handicappers. And good luck with your bets tonight.